FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Zidane! Oh, Batistuta! Oh, what a fantastic hit! Henry will have to do it alone. Oh, and here's Raul! Oh,
he's not just graceful, he's strong and determined. And look at the acceleration. It's a wonderful run from Kaká.
The Euro Show with Adriano Del Monte on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Don't you just love it when they play an ad and it says Adriano Del Monte and then you go, no, it's not, it's George Tanicki, and along with the man who actually does run the show, Matt Bruick. Good afternoon, mate.
Hi, George. Good to be with you today.
Can you believe it? It's the Euro Show without Adriano.
Yeah, we should have changed the intro. You deserve more respect.
No! I was wanting it to be you.
No.
Look, I think it's a fantastic opportunity. He's been working the hours and burning the candle, and he needs a break, the poor guy.
Yeah, he's doing a great job.
Little
Adriano.
Inspiration.
He needs to recover from that devastating Italy loss.
Do you know, I have it on very good authority that he's seeing a professional. There may well be a real need that we help him back, because it didn't just shock him. It shocked half of Italy, if not all of Italy. And it has sent tremors around the Italian diaspora around the world.
And he told me he was watching with his whole Italian relative family in the morning.
We shouldn't be laughing.
Yeah, after the 0-0, was kind of seeing that it was a 0-0 game. No one said anything for 10 minutes after the game.
Matt,
so what a tough morning that was.
Can I just say, I can reflect and understand some of his angst and pain, because equally, way back in 2004, I can remember a whole nation and diaspora of Greeks across the globe resonating and being very excited by the fact that Greece had done the unthinkable and had won the European Championship for the first time in its history, when you consider it went into the tournament 100-1 outsiders to even win a game.
I remember that very well. Otto Rehagel, German coach back then.
He's the crazy German they used to call him. But he was marvellous.
Yeah.
Do you know, you touched on Otto Rehagel. I heard a wonderful bit of background regarding Otto and the first training session. Do you know what he asked of all the Greek players?
What did he do?
He had a 44-gallon drum set up in the middle of the ground. And what do you think he asked of all the players?
You tell me.
To throw their individual team shirts into the 44-gallon drum. And then he burnt them all.
Uh-huh.
And he brought out 24 shirts, brand new. They were the new Greek strip.
Yeah? Very interesting.
And he said, there's one for each and every one of you. We're not going to be a team of stars. We're going to be a team. And sure enough, the difference between their best effort and their worst was minimized to this level, which is almost, you couldn't tell. Yeah. And that effort strewn across 24 players, they did the unthinkable. And Adidas thought enough of it to create a whole new global campaign called Impossible is Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, Rehagel has always been a little bit different, even when he coached in Germany. His old-fashioned coaching
What did the Germans make of him at the time? Was he truly respected?
Definitely. He was one of the most respected coaches ever, like winning the German championship with Bremen, with Bayern.
Yep.
The bad thing he did was he took over Hertha Berlin at a point where they were kind of already relegated, and he was supposed to rescue them, which didn't work. But his reputation in Germany is just very, very good.
Wow. Let's start the program, as we tend to do, with getting a sense of what happened in the French Division 1, or Ligue 1. And we saw two fantastic games. Paris Saint-Germain played Troyes, and then it was Nantes against Monaco, or Ranieri against his whole team. In order to get you into the mood and to get everyone involved with the Euro Show, let's play some of the wonderful audio that we got this morning, and it'll give you a flavour and some of the sensation that took part in that game. Here we go.
Verratti has found Meunier, plenty of PSG players in this penalty area, as Cavani goes down melodramatically looking for a penalty, and he's been given the penalty. Well, you have to feel for Troyes. My instinct here is that Cavani did have his shirt tugged, but whether it was enough for him to go down in the manner in which he did, 17 of the Ligue 1 season. It's saved by Samassa. And you have to say that maybe justice has been done. He finds the net. Another goal for the poster boy. And maybe PSG are going to win it after all. They've done it the hard way. They may well be destined to win this one ugly. Neymar has picked out Cavani. It's two. And the double act has struck again. Neymar has now scored one and made one. And it is some Cavani, who missed the penalty earlier, gets that little bit closer to Zlatan's club record.
Oh, lovely ball through. Salah trying to go around the goalkeeper, who just does enough. Still going, Adrian Thomasson. Can he get it onto his right foot for the shot? He can! Oh, neatly done. Dubois drives it in. Aloki couldn't meet it. Glick got it away. Driven it towards Falcao, but the header came in the end from Glick. It's Diego Carlos. Could have dropped anywhere. Lima! He's won it for Nantes! Lucas Lima, the Brazilian. And Claudio Ranieri beats his old club with a late goal.
Matt Brewick, you notice a Brazilian had a hand in both wins?
Yeah, very interesting. Obviously, Neymar, the absolute superstar of Paris, it was closer than I thought. I thought PSG would be as dominant as they usually are in the Ligue 1 against Troyes, who are playing a respectable season, sitting in 13th spot now. But it was a very, very tough game. And in the end, Neymar and Cavani, how many times did we say these names across the last couple of weeks? Just superstars.
The thing that separated these two was the extra star power of Paris Saint-Germain. But the coach, I noticed after the game, did say that he liked it because it showed that they were a bit more patient and they realised they're up against a well-organised unit. And Troyes asked a lot of them. And for two-thirds of that match, there was a clear chance that we might see the first real upset of the French season.
Yeah, I think as a neutral supporter, you're almost hoping for an upset because Paris are so dominant in this league. Yeah. It's not really good for the competition right now.
Did you say competition?
well, it used to be a competition. They're 41 points. They're already 10 points ahead of the second. So it's all over already. It's just a matter of if they break all the point and goal scoring.
So you're prepared
records.
To set it up right now?
I am, yes. Paris will definitely win this one, and I predict they will win by more than 20 points.
Okay. What did you make of Nantes and Monaco?
Monaco are really, really struggling in the last couple of weeks. It started losing to Leipzig in a do-or-die game in the Champions League, and then they lose to Leipzig 4-1 at home, which is so poor for their standards. And finishing that group with Porto, Istanbul, and also Leipzig 4th, so not even in the Europa League. It started there already.
Now, you mentioned their poor form. I still think at the end of the day that if you lose the quality of players they lost in the off-season, It's a great deal to ask of the next crop who might need a season or two of seasoning. Do you know what I mean? And this is we're seeing it actually evolve in front of our very eyes that Monaco, despite the money, despite the power, and despite some of the stars in there, the players that have left, we're talking about Mendy, we're talking about Lacazette, please, they're making a difference in the other leagues. There's a reason why, because they were talented, very talented.
And obviously Mbappé, the big one who went to Paris.
Yes, we keep forgetting, don't we?
Yeah, scoring for Paris almost every game. Didn't score this time, but he's a great striker as well. They still have Falcao. For me, they're way too reliant on him. If he doesn't score, they're pretty much not really powerful up front, and they concede way too many goals in the back. And now, this was a crucial game. It was almost like a game in the race for the second spot, because they were second. They were the only ones who were maybe a little bit in striking distance to Paris, if that's even there. And they lost and dropped to fourth spot. So Lyon and Marseille both in front of them right now. And obviously to concede in the 90th minute, it's always hard to swallow.
Okay, so we've seen now these midweek results. How does it look now? How does it set up Ligue 1 for the next part, so the next half a dozen matches?
Yeah, well, so Paris, like I said, 10 points ahead, 47 goals scored after 15 matches. That is amazing.
It's
they have
firepower.
A goal difference of plus 37, and the second spot, Marseille, only have plus 13. So that's almost like a 20-goal difference. They've got so much power up front. defensive players, they're good all over the field, but the defense doesn't really have to do much because they're scoring so many goals. And the teams that PSG face are usually just defending and trying not to concede. And so far, it didn't work. So next week, they're playing at Bayern Munich in a kind of a dead rubber in the Champions League, but it will be interesting how they actually...
What do you expect of that? What do you think we're likely to see? Will Emery ask... will he send out a different squad or will he send out the top squad?
Well, look, they don't...
If there's nothing in it.
Yeah, they don't... Well, there's something in it if they lose 4-0 plus... to Bayern Munich, which is not going to happen, we don't think. So
no.
I think he will actually play the best team because this is one of the first ever games this whole year that they are playing an opponent that is probably in striking distance to them. Because
and
the
has a defense.
Has a defense. They will surely this time Heynckes will play Hummels and Boateng. There won't be any experiments. Robin will be back. Lewandowski is very strong for Bayern up front. It will be a big test. The first game went 3-0 to Paris. That was a week before Ancelotti's sacking, because so Bayern were in a very, very bad shape back then. Will be a different game. I predict a Bayern win here because it will be the first real test to Paris, and they actually are not used to that.
Speaking of not used to things, have you recovered from Lewandowski's new hairdo?
Yeah, to make it gray, it was actually by request of his girlfriend, it's his wife now.
Okay.
Who actually said, do something different, I'm getting a bit bored. But very, very interesting. It didn't help him, he didn't score against Gladbach, hit the post twice, but maybe he should
maybe
get back
the
to
players,
his old
hair. Maybe his fellow players couldn't pick him out. They kept looking up and couldn't see Lewandowski.
Yeah, we had that with Mats Hummels a couple of months ago. Just dyed all his hair blonde.
Yeah.
And after he noticed it was pretty bad, after 1 week later, it was back to his normal again.
So, okay, your prediction, will we see the original colour return? Or is he going to stay where he is now? Or go a different shade?
Now he's going to stay a little bit, I think. So his girlfriend or his wife has a big say in it. So I think it will stay a little bit. So just quickly on Lewandowski as well.
Yep,
his wife had an interview during the week, which was very interesting.
Yeah.
And said, like, in the long term, it's our dream of Lewandowski, of Robert and me, to live in L.A. And obviously the only club there is L.A. Galaxy. So there was a little bit of a talk. Maybe he might end up there at some point, but we'll see how that works out.
So already now we have a player power giving us a clue where they want to end up.
Yeah,
the MLS.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be a huge coup for the MLS.
It would be. I mean, we've seen Beckham there at that very club. There's one club in LA, so it can only be Galaxy.
Sure.
And they pay well, I'm sure. So if they want to live that lifestyle, and he's won the Champions League, he's won everything, maybe that will be an option.
Wow. Let's take a short break. You're listening to The Euro Show. It's George Tanikian along with Matt Bruick. And if you're wondering where Adriano Del Monte is, we don't know. I think he's gone on holiday. He'll be back soon.
FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Zidane! Oh, fantastic! Rakitic, Stuta! Oh, what a fantastic hit! Henry will have to do it alone. Oh, and here's Raul! Oh, he's not just graceful, he's strong and determined. And look at the acceleration. It's a wonderful run from Kaká. It's a wonderful goal from Kaká!
The Euro Show with Adriano Del Monte on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, the Euro Show, but not with Adriano. He's away at the moment. It's Matt Bruick and George Tanikian. And the first time I immersed myself in the Euro experience was way back in 1990 for the World Cup, when I went there to do it for commercial radio at the time. And we did some television reports as well. And it was quite extraordinary. And I thought the best team was the one that didn't make it to the final. It was the Italians, led by some characters, Roberto Baggio and a guy called Toto Schillaci. And it's you know, Italy during World Cup time is a magnificent time to be in that part of the world because you see the world coming.
I believe 1990 had a very, very deserved winner.
Oh, let's not go there. I was about to say West Germany, it was possibly the one tournament that they just fell over the line, and it was a dive. And one of my stars, Jürgen Klinsmann, accepted that later on.
It was a dive.
Yeah.
I accept that too.
And you know how beautiful it was? He understood the criticism, and then when he went to Tottenham, in his first game for Tottenham at White Hart Lane, when he scored, he ran to the fans and then dived in front of them. And I think he basically said to them, yes, I'm a diver and here you go. And they loved him from that day on. But let's talk Serie A, and it's Napoli, Juve, Benevento, AC Milan and Inter Chievo, the first three games we want to talk about. Let's talk about this absolutely headline game at the very top. You've got the team that has threatened to run away with the competition, Napoli, and Juventus that, any other day you'd say, you're kidding, this is the team that basically handles the Italian Serie A whenever it wants to. Who's going to win?
Well, usually, as you mentioned, we see that the other way around. Like, Juventus is threatening
the powerhouse, yes,
to just run away with it, and now it's Napoli. This is going to be a very, very big game. It's a season-defining game for both those teams because Juventus right now are 4 points adrift of Napoli already at this stage, which is very,
shock,
very surprising. It's surprising. I mean, Juventus has been winning the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're a powerhouse, and Napoli are in such strong form, especially at home. So,
does Higuain play?
Look, Adriano was very, very strong on Higuain the last couple of days that he really does not like him, and he thinks Higuain is scoring a lot of goals in those games where Juve win 5-0 anyways. But in the big game, he disappears, and Mandzukic deserves a chance, and I agree. I think Mandzukic has played really, really well in the last game. He's so strong with his head. He's always good for a goal. And Higuain is adding to his goal toll every time against like Benevento and Spal and teams like that. In the big games, Adriano is right. He tends to disappear.
I think there is something in that, because if that wasn't the case, then he would be being picked regularly for Argentina, wouldn't he?
That's true. And also in the World Cup final against Germany, he didn't do too much. We've seen that many, many times. So I believe if he sticks to Dybala, Mandzukic, it would be very, very good for them. I believe Napoli have a big chance, though, of winning this game. So they're really, really strong. Juventus, on the other side, you know when it's all on the line. They're a bit like the Bayern Munich of Germany. Then they come and win a game like this, even with a dirty 1-0. And then the whole system
Dybala
changes.
Dybala is a predator.
Yes, he is.
And he is in that sort of form that you could see him doing something special. And with Mandzukic being that counterbalance, it may well be a strategic play.
100%. So what an impressive game this is. So if Napoli win, they jump to 41. Juventus stay on 34. That's sort of 7 points is already a big buffer.
That's a statement too, isn't it?
And then the week after, Juventus are playing Inter. So another massive game. Inter currently in second spot. So let's say Juventus win both those games. They will reclaim top spot and they will be in the box seat. If they lose both games, they're almost out of title contention. So very, very big 2 weeks.
Okay. Benevento and AC Milan. What do you make of this?
Yeah, well, Benevento, just I'm having a look at them every week to just hope they get at least 1 point. I mean, they've played 14 games right now and have 0 points. Only scored 6 goals, conceded 34. This is by far the worst team in European soccer right now. And
is their salary and their budget reflect that?
It does. And Adriano said we have to come back to an 18-team competition because this is clearly not what we want, to have a team with 0 points after 14 games. What's the point? So AC Milan obviously have their new coach in right now, Gattuso. And the boss has said he's not an interim coach. He will actually do it for the long term. I've got my doubts. The next 6 or 7 games for Milan are all winnable. There's no Napoli, Inter, Juve or Roma in that. So Gattuso will come in. He's a presence. He's a legend of the club. And the players will look up to him and go through the fire for him.
Well, he was a fiery character on the pitch. He demanded the ball, didn't he?
Is he a great coach? I'm not sure. He got sacked at many stations in the last couple of years. So
is it a case because he, in order to get his coaching pedigree up or his experience, he was prepared to take on jobs where others weren't prepared to tread, and he, as we knew from day one, he was a fearless defender. So for him, any challenge, he was happy to take it on if it was going to broaden his experience as a coach?
Yeah, probably. So he obviously
is that a fair comment or not?
It is. It's a very fair comment. And he got his trainer license as well, so I'm not sure how hard it is these days to get it.
Yep.
But he didn't do too well, and AC Milan also have like a bad record with Inzaghi, who didn't do well, the former players. I believe they can win, let's say, 6 of the next 7 games in the league because the opponents are all beatable. But when it comes to the crunch games against the big teams, then it's also about knowledge as a coach.
Strategy,
yeah, tactical knowledge. And I don't really think he has that. So they will win a couple of games right now and ride on this wave of success. And then I think in the end, they will finish up around 7th or 8th spot where they are right now.
All right. You're listening to The Euro on FNR, Football Nation Radio. Matt Bruick and George Danikin standing in for Adriano Del Monte. Inter taking on Chievo. Your thoughts earlier were interesting. Why don't you give us again a refresh? And which way do you believe this game will go?
I believe Inter will win. They're so strong at the moment too. So I really like to see in the Serie A that those clubs, Inter, AC Milan, who were struggling so badly in the last couple of years. I mean, when I grew up, they were the top European
clubs. They were powerhouses,
clubs.
Yeah.
And then they slipped to like 10th, 12th in the Serie A even. Yeah, like, we didn't see them internationally.
Governance comes back to governance. When your hierarchy forgets how to do what it should do and how to do it, then you stand condemned. And sure enough, those clubs, those great clubs of the past, have taken a fearful hit, and they're only just starting to come back with new ownership, with new money streams, new revenue opportunities. But they need to play well on the pitch, and you're thinking Inter will successfully mount the challenge and take the points.
Yeah, I think Inter will get it done. Chievo are playing a very respectable season, standing mid-table, 20 points on 9th spot. That is good for a team like Chievo. They're obviously not really competing for the Champions League spots,
yep,
but they don't have anything to do with the relegation zone either, so that's good for them. If Inter wins, so they go to 39 points, and depending on how that Napoli-Juve game plays out, they could even claim top spot. So very, very interesting to then face Juve. So yeah, it will be
the machinations are just extraordinary. When you start to put them like that, it makes you ponder, is it possible that we could see an upset that would allow that to happen? But let's just wait and see. All right, let's move to the Bundesliga, the first division in Germany, and Leverkusen, Dortmund. Now, Dortmund have had a horrendous season in the European Championship matches. Everyone was touting that they'd be up there one or two with Real Madrid, but as we saw, they couldn't even take the points from Apoel in Cyprus, either away or home. They drew in both instances, and their form in the Bundesliga has been, fair to say, patchy?
Absolutely shocking lately. I mean, they haven't won in 11 games now, and the only win came against a third division club in the German Cup, which they won 5-0, which you expect they would win by a high margin. So they can't win anymore. They've started the season so well. They were 5 points clear of Bayern Munich, and everybody thought, hey, this year we have actually got a competition. And then they just played so poorly all of a sudden, starting in the Champions League. And also then it dragged on to the league. They just can't win. The defense is absolutely bad. They completely missed to replace Mats Hummels, their big center back and captain. He was a big figure in that team, especially in the defense. And now they concede, every game they concede 2 or 3 or 4 goals. It's quite embarrassing for a club.
Well,
like
if
Dortmund.
You can't hold your defense and you start leaking goals, then it puts an enormous pressure at the other end of the pitch where you need to score goals. And at one stage there, they were one of the most prolific scoring teams in the competition. But as you say, the pressure on the back has just taken its toll. Have there been any grumblings within the club, like a civil war, for example? Aubameyang this year has had some disciplinary problems. Anything in that, or are we just making too much out of it?
No, I think there's definitely something in it. So he's been suspended for a game a week ago because he rocked up late to training.
Couldn't get out of the house because of the gate, was it, or something else?
He didn't make anything up this time. Apparently...
did you just say he didn't make anything up this time?
Yeah, because over the whole course of the last season, there are reports in the newspapers, he rocked up late every second training session. But if you score every game and then you're second in the league and it's all going well, then your teammates and also your coach, which was a different one last year, obviously, than this year, the coach, but then they forgive you. It's fine. But once you fail, you don't score anymore, picked up a yellow and red, an absolutely unnecessary yellow and red card on the weekend. when they were still 4-2 up, so that was a game changer as well. Then they start to talk to him and say, hey, what are you doing? You're rocking up late to training. We're sitting in fifth spot. We're losing every game. You're not scoring. You're picking up red cards. And then the teammates don't accept it anymore, and the coach doesn't either. So there is some very, very bad trouble within that team. And I predict that they are going to lose to Leverkusen on the weekend, because Leverkusen lost the first three games. Since then, haven't lost in 10. Are very, very good lately, are in very strong form. And then Peter Bosz will be gone after this game.
And, of course, it's a home game for Leverkusen too.
Home game, yeah.
So, again, giving them a little bit of an opportunity to create a fortress. Their fans, they are very strong fans. You expect them to add a little bit more, shall we say, colour for the arrival of Dortmund?
I mean, Dortmund have some of the best fans in the league, you
can
say. At home, definitely, but they've got...
Do they travel as well?
Yeah, they've got heaps of travelling fans as well. There will be at least... It's a small stadium in Leverkusen, only fits around 37,000.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the smaller ones, and you only get 10% to the club that visits, so there will maybe be 4,000, around 4,000 Dortmund supporters. Maybe they are even happy to play away from home at this stage, because they copped a lot of criticism from their own fans after that 4-4. They were really, really poor, and they went to the big Südtribüne where all the standing supporters and the hardcore supporters stand, and they were, let's say, unhappy. That is nicely put.
It's interesting you brought up that 4-4 result. I don't think I've heard or can remember a team going up 4-0 and then finishing the game 4-4. Schalke and Dortmund last week. That was extraordinary. Have you seen anything in your lifetime?
In my lifetime, I've never ever seen it. I've seen a game. It was
I've Dortmund. Seen two, and I've seen three. You know, come back 3-3, but I've never seen a 4-4.
One of them, the famous Liverpool Milan, 4-4 up, and then 4-4. I have actually witnessed one, and that was around 5 or 6 years ago.
Yep.
Years ago, in a European qualifying game, Germany against Sweden. Germany were up 4-0 and then drew 4-4. Because they just took it easy and Liv did some substitutes, and that was a big outrage in the newspaper as well.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
And again, it gives you more evidence that you cannot or you shouldn't take your foot off the pedal.
I mean, generally it was said that Borussia Dortmund are struggling with their confidence. They're not winning games. But for me, it's not an excuse, because at home, if you're 4-0 up at halftime, you even go into halftime with a 4-0. So you get a break. You say, hey, guys, it's going well. Let's just not concede, maybe score one more, and it's all good, and the supporters are already celebrating. I cannot understand how this can possibly happen. Schalke have been taking, or the VAR has taken away a goal from Schalke as well, the video assistant referee, so it could have been even more. unbelievable. It's not a confidence thing. It's when you're 4-0 up, you should have the confidence regardless of the results of the last week.
I tend to agree, because we always used to hear that 2-0 was the most dangerous score at halftime you could be up against, because people can come back. They get one and suddenly it's only one difference. But four, extraordinary. Anyway, we move on. Let's get to one of your favourite games. It's Bayern Munich up against Hannover.
Yeah, so
4-5-0 to Bayern?
I believe it's going to be 4-5-0, because Bayern tend to bounce back after a loss. That was a massive game against Gladbach, because if they would have won, they would have moved to 32 points and would have been 8 points clear of Leipzig. Now it's three. So Leipzig are very much in striking distance, and they travel to a struggling Hoffenheim, which they can win as well. And we have to keep in mind, obviously, Bayern and Leipzig play again in the second half of the season. And it could be a very, very tough gig now for Bayern Munich. Obviously, also some noises about the coach. So Uli Hoeneß, one of the Bayern bosses, says, yeah, you might be coaching next year. And then a couple of hours later,
Karl-Heinz Rummenigge said straight away.
It's not going to happen. And Jupp Heynckes said, I don't know why Hoeneß did that. I'm not coaching next year. So there's a bit of noise within Bayern Munich. Maybe now is the chance for other clubs.
That's unusual, isn't it? Normally, there's one voice at Bayern.
I mean, since
you don't hear three or four different comments coming up about the one topic, coach.
But it's happened a lot lately. Since Uli Hoeneß came back from prison, he was in prison for a tax
evasion
crime. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So since he came back, it looks like Rummenigge. He just has a lot of power, and he is struggling to give power back to Hoeneß. Before, it was a 50-50. And I believe that Rummenigge, or newspapers reported, Rummenigge really wanted Thomas Tuchel, a former Dortmund coach, as a coach, and Hoeneß wanted Nagelsmann, the current Hoffenheim coach. So they could not come to a conclusion, and in the end gave Heynckes the gig, which the only thing what that does is buying them more time to then get a good solution for next season, because obviously Heynckes is just an interim,
yeah,
and now they've got more time to actually find a good solution. So that would have never happened 10 years ago before his imprisonment. So yeah,
crazy
a
stuff.
Little bit different.
Crazy stuff. Hoffenheim, Leipzig.
Yeah, Leipzig, I think, will win this game. Hoffenheim are poor lately. So, I mean, he's the coach, Julian Nagelsmann. Firstly, he's been in discussion for the vacant Bayern job. He didn't get it in the end. Now he's in talks for the vacant, soon-to-be-vacant Dortmund job, yeah, from next season on. Maybe that gets to him a little bit too. I mean, he's...
You think it might distract him?
Maybe. Like, every press conference, the first question is, where are you coaching next year? Not about the game.
Yeah.
And the players know that as well. There's also some talks that Sandro Wagner, their striker, is in talks to actually for a move to Bayern Munich in the winter break as a backup for Lewandowski. That would be, yeah, a big loss as well. And Leipzig just continue their strong form. They're very, very impressive, obviously, with the big Red Bull concern behind them.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
have a little bit of a kick-up start into the league, if you want to mention it like that. But they're playing well, and they are, for me, the only team that can really maybe threaten Bayern this year.
This is the Euro Show on FNR. George Stanicki along with Matt Bruick, and we're talking the Bundesliga. And the final game of this particular round that we want to preview is the Wolfsburg Mönchengladbach contest. Mönchengladbach now really starting to do some interesting things. How do you think this result or this match is likely to tilt? Is it going to go Wolfsburg's way, or is it going to go Mönchengladbach's way?
So Wolfsburg, for me, for people who don't know, they have the Volkswagen concern behind them. So they're very, very strong financially as well. But since they have won the premiership in 2009, they've pretty much been the biggest disappointment for me. So even this year, they're in 14th spot, only 3 points ahead of the relegation zone. With all the players they have and all the money they have, they're so disappointing. So the new coach came in. What he did was like 7 straight draws. So what are you going to do? Like, you don't lose, you don't win. 7 straight draws. Then they finally got a win. And then last week they lost. So they are so, like, inconsistent. And you can't really judge them. I think Gladbach are in great form right now. And they will take the points. I'm hoping so, obviously. I'm a Gladbach supporter. But Gladbach playing very, very nicely lately, sitting in 4th spot. And the last win that Dortmund had, by the way, was a 6-1 against Gladbach, which was obviously a bad day for me. And Dortmund were 8 points
ahead. You were crushed.
Yeah, Dortmund were 8 points ahead of Gladbach at this point. Now Gladbach are 3 points ahead of Dortmund. That's how quickly it can turn around. And if Gladbach win this game, they can go as high as 3rd. So would be very, very interesting.
Just before we take a break, I want to take you back a moment. You mentioned Wolfsburg is, run and basically under the auspices of VW. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting that the VW is still recovering in its own way after the diesel fiasco, where they put limiters on their engines, unbeknownst to everybody else, in order to claim certain things so that the cars could be sold around the world, supposedly performing much, much better. Maybe they've had a limiter on them too, and the suggestion that they would be a better team has been brought back to heel. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, well,
crazy bow to drag, but something to think about.
No, it definitely had an influence, and they said it as well.
You mean in morale terms?
And money-wise. Oh. So they couldn't pay VfL Wolfsburg as much money as they used to.
Okay.
But if you see the clubs that are ahead of Wolfsburg, Mainz, Berlin, Hannover, Frankfurt, Augsburg.
Yeah, yeah.
They are all clubs that hardly have any money, like really, compared to Wolfsburg. So they should still be up there. And for the last couple of years, changing their coaches all so often, it doesn't work. So if you have like 5 coaches in 3 years, it's never a good sign.
Yeah, yeah. It suggests that there are problems. Mm-hmm. All right, no problems with us. We're just going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll start discuss La Liga and also give you a preview of some more games coming up in Ligue 1.
FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Zidane! Oh, fantastic! Batic Stuta!
to do it alone. Ah! And here's Raul!
He's not just graceful, he's strong and determined. And look at the acceleration. It's a wonderful run from Kaká. It's a wonderful goal from Kaká.
The Euro Show with Adriano Del Monte on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Formentera buscando el gol. Lanzamiento de esquina, balón, primer palo. Gol, 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 gol.
Oh, before you wonder, is that Adriano screaming in the background? Is that why he's not on air? No, 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 no. Matt Brewick, can you tell us what that was?
It was the Copa del Rey. So Athletic Bilbao playing Formentera and losing on aggregate. So that is one of the big surprises, because you see, sometimes you can lose a leg,
yep,
because you already threw, or Real Madrid, they drew 2-2, but they went through 4-2 on aggregate, so no one cares. But Athletic Bilbao are out of the Copa del Rey.
Shock and awe, and the commentator conveying that most brilliantly. It's the Football Nation radio program, George Stanekian along with Matt Brewick. We're talking the Euro program, and it's the Euro show. And in fact, one of the things that we haven't covered yet is La Liga. We went right through and we started the program with a series of matches that were played this morning overnight in Ligue 1. Then we took you through Serie A and the Bundesliga. Now let's look at La Liga and some big games coming up. And the first of those sees Barcelona playing Celta.
Yeah, so Barcelona, they are so strong this year. So you can't really tell that they miss Neymar at all. I think they just continued.
Who?
I think they just continued their very, very strong form. And for me, they are one of the favorites for the Champions League as well. We've got Paris with all the money. We've got Manchester City. But I think in the end, it's a team that have kept their players for a long, long time, Barcelona, and they're playing so well. Obviously, they've got Messi, still got Suarez and Dembele.
Is Suarez likely to regain or recapture some of that sparkling form? I know he has a wonderful way of finding Messi, but just lately, he looks like he's not, something's not right. Is it his body or is it his mindset? I just don't see that lethal weapon that we've seen for the last half a dozen years playing in Barcelona.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's similar to Cristiano Ronaldo. He hasn't scored too many this year so far, and usually we're used to him scoring every game. I think Suarez, it's just a period right now that he's going through. He still has a lot of assists, finding Messi very, very well, as you said. I think it's just a period, and until when he starts scoring a couple of goals, he will get on a roll again. He's such a world-class striker. We saw it at Liverpool already, and he's done wonderful things at Barcelona as well. This game will be a Barcelona win. Celta, a ninth spot, 17 points, a very respectable season, but they're already 18 points behind Barcelona as well. If Barcelona win, they go to 38. They're already right now, they're already 8 points ahead of Real Madrid, which is very, very surprising after 13 games.
And this is after their draw last week against Valencia. Bilbao, Real Madrid. Any chance that Real Madrid now is starting to get back into some measure of form?
Surely. They're always very, very good in those games. And Bilbao, as we just mentioned, losing to a second division team in the Copa del Rey. So they played during the week, which will cost them some kind of power. Real Madrid played as well, but they played their second tier. As we mentioned, just a 2-2 going through 4-2 on aggregate. Real Madrid is always able to bounce back. And they can probably, if they would probably win every game that is left in the Primera División, I still don't think they would take out the title, because Barcelona are just too strong. They won't drop too many points. And yeah, Real Madrid have dropped too many already, and I think it's impossible for them to catch up on Barcelona this year.
Real Madrid, are we going to see the Welsh Dragon back in the team anytime soon?
Well,
we're talking about Gareth Bale.
Of course. Such a great player, unfortunately very, very injury prone. There are already talks that he is seeking a transfer, but his manager said he doesn't really want to go to the Premier League because they're playing too tough. I mean, if you're a soccer if you're a football player, you should be used to it. You're a bit more cautious if you've got numerous injuries. but you either play on top international level, and that is where the Premier League is at as well, obviously, or you don't. So if your body can't hold it up, maybe go to China where they take it a little bit easy and give you some money.
I'd go to the A-League in Australia and just run around defences.
I think they couldn't pay him.
There's no doubt about that. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Let's move on to Getafe and Valencia, one of the teams that really has made quite an impact this year and is playing a really exciting brand of football.
Wonderful. One of the surprise stories of the year, Valencia. They've been a big name in European football for many, many years. I remember them being in the Champions League final against Bayern Munich, and Bayern Munich just won in the penalty shootout. Wow. It was one of the big goalkeeper competitions. Oliver Kahn on Bayern and Canizares, one of the legends.
Both of them very good.
At
very,
Valencia.
Very good.
So it's very, very good to see them back up there. They are profiting from Atletico and Real Madrid, and also Sevilla struggling a little bit. But they're only 4 points adrift of Barca, and could have won that game if it wasn't for that wonderful goal from Jordi Alba last weekend.
It was extraordinary.
Yeah, which led Barca to a 1-1 draw at Valencia. But they are getting the results out of the last five matches, won four and drew one, which was against Barcelona. So a second spot for Valencia would be wonderful.
We talk about wonderful things. Are we ever likely to see VAR or the goal technology arrive in La Liga anytime soon?
So VAR is supposed to come in next year. The goal line technology, that is the biggest question mark for me, because all the other big leagues, Germany, France, Italy and England have it, and Spain does not. So the VAR, I can understand why you want to wait and see how the other leagues do, because there's a lot of controversies in Germany, in Italy, and it's not really going so smoothly. But the goal line technology is a black or white decision. So is the goal behind the line or not? There is no gray area, and the referee just gets a quick vibration on his arm and then looks on his watch and it says goal. And then it's in. There's no delay of game. It wouldn't change the game.
It's to do with the chip in the football, is it not?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know why you would not have it in such a big league. And last weekend, that goal from Messi was half a meter in. So
yeah, it was.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Mind you, I did see a goal like that scored against Tottenham many years ago by someone from Manchester United who will remain nameless. they went on to win the title by the said 2 points. And it was all to do with that result.
Those results
affect major competitions, and they shouldn't.
Yes, exactly. And I don't. I'm
especially
not sure.
Now when we see billions of dollars,
much money involved
following the winner.
Yeah, so much money involved. Do you maybe remember 2010 World Cup, Germany playing England, and Germany were the better team, anyways. But they were 2-0 up, then England scored the 2-1, and then Terry had a kick from 30 meters out, bounced off the crossbar. It was a meter in, and Neuer picked it up, and they just said play on, and it finished 4-1. It would have been the 2-2.
I don't want to stir old ghosts, but Wembley. I can remember 1966, Wembley, and Hans Tilkowski will still tell you what he saw.
I mean, Germany was the better team in that game, but it would have been a 2-2. And the momentum would have swung. And that's a big decision.
Huge.
And it wasn't given. So I think there's too much money involved. And these are professional players, professional referees. So please, let's get the technical
and
stuff.
It's not as if La Liga is thinking that it wants to remain in the doldrums. They're saying every day. In fact, I caught up with some people only the other day at their Money and Sport conference on the Gold Coast. And they were from La Liga. And they were saying that they are making an overt move to lift La Liga to make it the Premier League in the world, if that's possible. So imagine, for them to make those moves, then they have to invoke and implement some of those things you were talking about.
Yeah, so it's coming in next year, apparently,
yep.
But that does not really help Barcelona right now. It won't really harm them because of the buffer they have in front of Real Madrid. But imagine this was like the last game of the season and they have to win, and then that goal is not given and it finishes 1-1 instead of 2-1. That's just amateur behavior by the referee and by the league not to have the goal line technology, and it has to change.
Now, the one thing that isn't amateur, or you can't accuse young Lionel Messi of being an amateur, his new wage structure, he's going to earn something in the vicinity of 200 plus million over the next 4.5 years, 800 $1,000 a week.
I mean, look, people are praising
him. I think we're
in
the wrong business.
No, people are praising him because he's a one-club player and it's beautiful, but you know what? If you start...
Like Harry Kane.
I very much doubt that, but we'll see how it pans out.
We'll see.
Look, if you're at Barcelona and you earn the money he earns, it's not really hard to be a one-club player because you're competing for the title in the league every year. And,
European.
And also European.
Champions
so there's no reason. It's a beautiful city too. So there's no reason for him to leave. And also I think he's got a clause in his contract that he can be transferred for I think it was $5 billion. So absolutely incredible. Good for him.
Look, when I hear numbers like that, they all look like the Football Nation radio phone number. You know, 99944 9999. If you ever want to reach out to us, that's the number, 99944 9999. Now, before we finish, and we've got 3 or 4 minutes to go, let's wrap up some of the latest transfer rumours. Do you want to take a short break? Or do you want to finish the program with that segment? It's up to you, Matt. You can call the shots. Adriano's not here.
Yeah, all right. Let's talk some transfers for
now. Okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
That'll allow us to wrap up the program.
Yeah, so we've got the usual suspects. So,
usual suspects.
Yeah, Julian Draxler, Paris. So he is in contact apparently with a number of clubs. First of them is Arsenal. So Arsenal are potentially looking to losing Özil after the season and also Sanchez.
So you're thinking that those two players that you've just mentioned will leave Arsenal?
I'm pretty sure that Sanchez will. I mean, he's shown many, many times that he's very, very unhappy at Arsenal with his behavior. I hate it when players do that. Like, I want to leave, but you've signed a contract, you know, that is still going for 3 or 4 years. And if the club says you stay, then you have to respect it. You signed that contract. You earn a lot of money and you owe it to the club and the fans that if they don't let you go, that you will stay and give it your best. So I believe Sanchez will be gone because he's a troublemaker too. If he doesn't play and he's on the bench,
yes,
he's making trouble. Özil, he's been linked to a move for like years and years. And what they say in Germany sometimes is when you're 5-0 up, he's the best player in the world. If you're 3-0 down, he's useless. It's pretty harsh, but you can kind of agree because, like, you know, he scored this morning again and they won 5-0. So he scored the fifth.
It's interesting you pose it that way. I put it slightly differently. I see him as the sort of player that the better the players are around him, that much more dangerous he is. He becomes that much more potent because he sees all those opportunities against lesser players who aren't moving, who aren't making the runs that he wants them to make, then he will struggle. And as you say, he may not be the two-way player that much of the game demands today. We're hearing that Real Madrid might need a new goalkeeper, and there is talk that the young goalkeeper at Atletico Bilbao, what's his name, Arrizabalaga, might be one of the new boys to step in.
Yeah, so since Canizares, Casillas, of course,
Casillas,
who's been there for a number of years, they're struggling a little bit on the goalkeeper position. I believe the young goalkeeper from AC Milan is also in talks. He's one of the biggest talents that we have currently in world football.
Yep.
He will obviously also be a chance to take over next year from the retiring Gigi Buffon because he's going to leave a big, big hole in that Juventus team. And I think if Juventus make him a big offer, then he probably would not refuse it. Maybe they will get Buffon in some kind of a goalkeeper coaching role as well. And if he can be mentored, that would be great.
All right, Matt Bruick, you've been a marvel. Thank you very, very much. You've been listening to the Euro Show on Football Nation Radio. George Denikin standing in for Adriano Del Monte. We'll be doing it for a few more days, but not to panic. Be back again. When are we back again?
Monday.
Monday. See you then.
The Euro Show with Adriano Del Monte on FNR, Football Nation Radio.